get our meeting to start. We have an order here. Supervisor Kopsoff, would you give the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Supervisor Help?
Here.
Supervisor Kopsoff?
Here.
Supervisor Ogren?
Present.
Supervisor Chris?
Present.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes. Okay, we're going to change the order here a little bit, just for the public to know this is a special meeting. We are going to take comments regarding the agendized item, which is the Klamath Dams today. So I appreciate that. And also, this will be once a month event as needed, but typically we're going to plan once a month at the end of the month. So this is going to be ongoing discussion, fact-finding, et cetera. We're going to start off with Mr. Bonham, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, to give us a start and intro of what's going on from the state's perspective.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just first check our technology and make sure you can hear me, and it's unclear whether you can see me.
Both. You can do both.
Great. So it's true. My name is Chuck Bonham, and I'm the director of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I appreciate the chair and the board's invitation to appear in front of you this morning. I applaud your commitment to a regularly scheduled place in which we have a discussion about this project. And I apologize for not being there in person. I have a series of other commitments this afternoon in Sacramento that kept me in town. So, Chair, with your pleasure, I think I'd like to cover three things that track the invitation I received from your staff. First, I'd like to give you a general update focused on certain dates and milestones since approximately November of last year. Second, I'd like to go to a little bit more specific level of detail and be responsive to your staff's request to illustrate some of the collaborative work going on between the county and the department on the project. I'd like to then, third, turn to a kind of a description by me of some of the restoration grant funding opportunities we're making available in the county. And then I'd like to pause for any questions you might have for me. Is that an okay approach, Chair?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. So here's the first part on the kind of general update. It's a summary. And before I start that summary, I'd note that in your staff report for this morning's meeting is a pretty detailed list. It covers about three pages of some of the more recent dates and milestones. So I refer you to that document, which I know you've read, by way of saying, you know, one of the first key update dates was November 17th of last year, 2022. As you know, that's the day on which the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission unanimously approved a license surrender order for this project. So all five commissioners approved, voted yes, no dissents, no concurring opinions. And that milestone moment is about 170-page federal order approving the project is really from where then a lot of the subsequent dates and kind of actions have been taking place. I would note for kind of a broader context, it's around about that same time, November 15th of last year, that the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, which is the corporate entity established to implement decommissioning, it began fulfilling several of its commitments that exist across the county. And one of those was on the 15th of last November, it delivered the first fire protection equipment to the Siskiyou County Fire Chiefs Association. So I think it was a series of pretty large vehicles, but there's more commitments the corporation will be satisfying with the Fire Chiefs Association and the county. So as we moved through November, one of the next most important dates to acknowledge was December 1st of 2022, which is when that corporation, the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, and the states of California and Oregon accepted a second order from FERC, which is a transfer order. So subsequent to the surrender order, then the corporation and the two states formally accepted transfer of license for purposes of the project. So that's another big milestone. Then on December 17th of last year, 2022, we had the statute of limitations expire for any party to request the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to have a rehearing on their license surrender order. So mid-December of last year, that milestone passed, and no party requested a rehearing on the surrender order. In that same kind of December end of last year, rolling into January of 2023 space, the Renewal Corporation has been completing a series of other implementation tasks and milestones. For example, it submitted updates to many of its management plans to implement the project. You know that there are a variety of subject matter areas, sediment or erosion or traffic, and the corporation has worked on management plans across all those issues. It submitted many of them updates in December. To pick an example, it has submitted its owner dam safety program back to FERC. It submitted its erosion and sediment control plan back to FERC. FERC has had approvals of a series of those plans. And that really takes us kind of into this month on a broad general update. Again, I refer you to your staff report. So my second topic for discussion, which you asked me to comment on, are those things that are going on between our department, your county, and others involved in project implementation. And here I would also point to a series of dates, because the dates kind of help keep our activities grounded in the calendar. So the most important date, I think, in this space is going back to December of last year, December 13, 2022. The county, the board, approved a final memorandum of understanding that has a couple of parties. One party, a memorandum of agreement. One party is you, the county. Another party is us, the Department of Fish and Wildlife. A third party is the Renewal Corporation. And the last party is Pacific Corp. So what this memorandum of agreement seeks to do is really create the capacity for you at the county level to be equipped to engage in the implementation effort. I am very sympathetic to this tap on the county's resources to be involved in a large project. I experienced the same thing for our department staff around the state. So this memorandum of agreement provides the county direct funding to eventually hire expert to be involved in project implementation. And I think the key part of this memorandum of agreement is the recital that says our department, the corporation, and Pacific Corps desire to establish a cooperative relationship with the county and comply with the substance of county permitting regulations and ordinances consistent with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's good neighbor policy. So kind of using that execution by you of this memorandum of agreement in mid-December of last year, there's been a series of engagements across a set of technical experts. So there was an implementation meeting, I understand, on December 16th. There's been a second implementation meeting on January 19th. And those discussions have included your planning experts, your public works experts, your community development staff, your buildings division staff, your environmental health staff at the county level as examples. It's included other state and federal agencies, and what's going on at that level is engagement on really specific, granular things that you're experienced with, we're experienced with, when you move into project implementation. So all of the pre-construction commitment status, all of the potential mobilization of your workforce, working through notification and dialogue around, road widening. And as you know, there's about a $3 million investment that's coming into the county to upgrade your county roads in the proximate area. The ability to work through, dust and construction contracts and that suite of activities. All of that's happening within kind of the broad overview of a construction schedule, which is, looking at road and bridges upgrades beginning as soon as this spring, really next week, next month, starting some of the pre-construction activity around creating a 21st century hatchery facility at Fall Creek, moving into, by the time you get to May of 2023, really a great local benefit of installing a new City of Wairika water supply line to help their water security and reliability. Moving through the summer of this year with mobilization, work pad installation, and into next year, 2024, where you'll see reservoir drawdown and removal. So that's what's happening really at a implementation level. It's an expression of the coordination going on between y'all, my department, and project implementation teams. I would just pause and say, I think that my department is a party to this memorandum of agreement in large part because it's important that an additional California governmental entity be part of that implementation program and not leave that just to you, the county alone. So my impression is the county wanted our department to join that memorandum of agreement so that we'd be able, as government in California, to keep a close relationship during implementation and not just leave it to you engaging with the Renewal Corporation, its contractors, alone without some additional state involvement in that effort. A last piece in this collaborative space that you asked me to talk about would be noting, as your staff did in their report, the January 10th of every year, a governor, no matter the governor, proposes their upcoming budget in the state budget process. And your staff correctly point out that within the overall budget proposal by Governor Newsom is a line item where our department is requesting 5 permanent positions to assist in 2 new programs in the Klamath Basin. The first would be a fisheries monitoring program in the upper reach of the river with you, RCDs, landowners, tribes. For about 45 years, we've been running monitoring efforts across the whole Klamath Basin, including in Siskiyou County. And given the endeavor ahead for this project implementation, we think it's prudent to build up our department's capacity, only 5 positions, to really working collaboratively with you and your staff and others, design a fisheries monitoring program for the upper reach of the river. And then secondly, to use that, we hope, improved capacity, also be able to manage about 1,400 acres, which would come to the department as part of project implementation. And I and you have a long-running discussion about what happens when the department takes on public property ownership in the county, but can't maintain the acreage. So this request for those staff is for that second purpose as well. Last topic, and then I'll pause for questions. You asked me also to cover the potential for, I'm sorry, Chair, did I
You're fine.
Miss a board member weighing in?
No, go ahead.
Okay. You asked me to cover the potential for restoration progress in important tributaries to the Klamath, which honestly is a topic separate from project implementation I was just updating you on, but is kind of running in parallel. And you as supervisors and I as director have been involved for many years, probably more than a decade, trying to advance collaborative restoration in the Scott River and the Shasta River. It's not easy. It's never perfect, but it is something that must continue at greater pace and scale. I'm also really aware that in September of last year, September 29th, you as a board published an opinion editorial in the Capitol Press, really opining that if across government with other partners, we don't come together and design a real purposeful restoration strategy, we may end up doing random acts of conservation. And I took your letter to heart. So at the end of November last year, November 30th, our department publicly announced the availability of $200 million in new grant funding under a variety of different programs we have at our department. And within that $200 million, after these kinds of restoration conversations I've been in with you as board supervisors, I was able to affirm and announce to the public that within the $200 million, we're going to have a set-aside, which is $20 million, specifically for the Scott River and its tributaries and the Shasta River and its tributaries. So $10 million available for each of those watersheds, where we will maintain that $20 million, make it available, and dedicate it for funding in those watersheds when projects come forward that can demonstrate support from and collaboration with both landowner interests and tribes. I've really run out of energy in the tank to always be in the middle of a lot of heated disagreement around restoration. And one of the things I'd like to motivate, which I think is an interest you may have as well, using the possibility of restoration support to assist the RCDs, the farm bureaus, and landowner interests to really engage with y'all and us and tribes to find the set of projects we can all agree upon, and then I can help underwrite support for them through this funding. So at the department level, we've developed a preliminary list of shovel-ready projects. We're adding to that list as we get additional project information from partners. We've got ongoing outreach across both watersheds to solicit information and projects. Projects are being submitted directly to the department's grants portal. And what we're doing here is also unique. We're not doing an annual date-driven submit your proposal by certain date, we'll get back to you 6 months later, and then we'll maybe do another funding round next year. We're going to have kind of a rolling open grants portal, and we've been letting everyone know how to apply so that we can just keep getting projects, confirm they're broadly supported for good restoration outcome, and start funding them. My own view of this potential use of $20 million is less about monitoring, less about additional science. We have a lot of other granting programs the county and RCDs use for that. Instead, what I'd like to do with this funding is really see if there are shovel-ready, ground-turning restoration projects that can make a difference right now that we know need to be done and need to get done soon. This is also sitting within the context of a significant amount of federal restoration money available across the basin, and we want to make sure our $20 million has connectivity to those other funding efforts so the greater use of all the assets is producing an even better return on investment with landowners across the region. That's a lot. I think those are the three topics you've asked me to cover. And let me pause there and see if you as board members have any questions for me.
Thank you, Mr. Baum. I'm going to come back to the board. Who would like to start? Supervisor Kopseff?
Good morning, Director. Thank you for being with us via Zoom. Appreciate the openness to this. And as you know, this is Siskiyou County is rolling out this these Klamath meetings for the duration of the year so that the public can hear what's going on. You know, more transparency than we've had in the past, so they'll be able to weigh in. One of the things you touched on a little bit, but I also want to acknowledge the funding mechanism for what we've, I guess, called the Upper Mountain Lakes, but water storage in the Scott, that the department has come alongside for, a study to see what would work best to store water and provide fish flows during the critical times where, currently ag's being asked to come up with that water. So that's appreciated as well. A couple of questions, I guess, for you. This has been a long road for all of us. And whether we, I'll say, agree or not on the project proposal in total, my view, at least today with this, is as it does move forward and it has been approved by the federal government, my desire would be that hopefully that this would end conflict within the watershed in total. Short of that, and bringing in more conflict, hopefully, which would not occur, would even exasperate, the decades that we've been working on this to some resolve. So, having said that, can we talk a little bit about the hatchery? I mean, I guess Pacific Power is supposed to take on the hatchery element for the 8 years after removal at Fall Creek. This board has been very supportive of, as you've heard over the years, IDAG injection. We're looking for a resolve for supplementation that removes, I guess, the cost factor to even the hatchery, whether it's local high schools or even the tribes themselves that could implement IDAG injection for future populations within the system. We continue to be supportive of that. I don't know if you want to weigh in on that real quickly before I go on, or do you want me to go on?
Your preference, I'd be glad to respond right now.
Okay, go ahead, and then I'll continue after.
Good. First, thank you for mentioning the High Mountain Lake water supply study. We did provide $250,000, $250,000 to fund that as a drought project analysis to study the possibility of utilizing High Mountain Lakes for water supply reliability. I actually have taken the time to go back and look over the last 5 years and look at other state agencies and in that same kind of water drought response category. I know the Department of Water Resources, our sister agency, has invested in the last 2 years $13.8 million in drought response projects, including $4.2 million to upgrade delivery systems for the McLeod Community Services District and $2.1 million to help upgrade Aetna's water system. So water supply reliability is really important as a predominant public goal as well. Secondly, I hear you on and really appreciate your frankness about whether there's agreement or not, whether there's support or not. Part of this project is now us engaging on implementation in a way that's respectful of the county, includes the county in implementation, and tries best to be a good neighbor under the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's good neighbor policy. I hope we're looking at less conflict in the future than in the past, but like you, I've been around since 2000 working in this basin. And sadly, I think there will always be some voices whose interest is in producing the conflict. But I can tell you personally what's on my mind. As we're implementing the decommissioning project, I personally am very committed to the conversation between water users, tribes, county government, state and federal agencies to find a fix to this annual fight over water. It's not good for any community, and it risks our future. And I think there's a way to find common ground that ensures reliable water deliveries, restoration and river health for tribes, improved states for our wildlife refuges, which will be good for rural economies. I believe that in the bottom of my heart. So on the hatchery, y'all know that the current facility at the base of Iron Gate is really old. We have this problem across the state like you may have. We have infrastructure built 40, 50, 60 years ago. It hasn't kept up with modern times. That hatchery itself arguably already has existing upgrade and maintenance demands that we can't meet. So part of project implementation for decommissioning is to move that capacity hatchery over to Fall Creek. We've worked with the city, we've gotten input from you, we've worked with commercial fishing, we've been in conversations with Oregon and tribes. That hatchery footprint on Fall Creek can be designed for the 21st century, smarter, create better cost efficiencies, more appropriate technology, and should mean for the next 8 years, our production levels will be sufficient for commercial and recreational needs. At the same time, I foresee it as a place where we can build collaboration with you, tribes, and others as a center for conservation science and how we might incorporate hatcheries as we're bridging this period post 8 years and dealing with reintroduction of spring and other salmon runs into the upper part of the basin. So I'm open to conversations like you've mentioned, and I think moving over to Fall Creek gives us the platform to have that kind of collaboration around the hatchery aspect of the big picture.
Thank you. There have been numerous local, I'll call it local knowledge, and I think even to some extent local studies by some of our residents of the natural barriers once dam removal occurs, that natural fish passages, I guess what's supposed to happen from this, but the natural barriers that may produce a problem, is there a commitment by the state of California, to not destroy those natural barriers or to create even more passage, or would those natural barriers be left in place?
If they
bear out to be true.
Yeah, so Supervisor, I'd start with the last part of your comment.
Okay.
I mean, that kind of assumes facts, not in evidence.
Right.
So what I'd like to do is just make sure we have an open conversation as we go through implementation.
Okay.
I think the record does establish that below a couple of those reservoirs are likely some of the biggest cold water springs that existed historically, which themselves will add great value to salmon recovery. And by the way, salmon recovery is good for the rural landscape because it helps us reduce regulatory obligations. So let's go through implementation in a way where you as the county can raise those kind of questions as we get into post-decommissioning and restoration commitments.
Okay. potential future flood. We know currently that these facilities are at least a holdback for downriver, but once they're removed, the county is not in a position to be able to produce any kind of funding for flood damage, flood emergency in the future if it occurs. How will we deal with that with the state of California? Can we get acknowledgement that that's a burden that the county will not be able to bear?
I think the Renewal Corporation has been very specific with the county on this, but first I'd go back to the State Water Board's environmental impact report on this project, which is no longer tied up in any challenges. So section 3.6.5.2 of that document is pretty direct that the dams don't alter the 100-year floodplain dynamic. These particular dams are not flood control dams. So the question becomes, what may happen downstream post decommissioning? And there, the Renewal Corporation, as you know, has established a local impact mitigation fund specifically designed to create the space for possible landowners downstream to seek, funding to deal with impacts pursuant to a process that's going to be pretty transparently available for those landowners. So I think a benefit for the Department of Fish and Wildlife signing the memorandum of agreement, which is what the county asked, is we can be involved with you on that topic as we go through project implementation.
Supervisor Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to colleagues, I'll limit myself to four questions here in the beginning. First, thank you for reading that letter from the Tri-Counties about the Random Acts of Conservation. And also thank you for recognizing the need for additional staffing. Our planning department came in and gave a report, it would have been about a month ago, saying that about a third of their time spent just on this process here. And of course we also have building permits and those sorts of things to do as well as county business. In regards to the local mitigation fund, I'm thinking of the Cocoa Lake community. Home values sadly have dropped since this process has started. For a lot of people that's their retirement, maybe even a mortgage for a college, their life savings. When the dams come out, the impact on wells, being able to, their own private wells to receive water, the fear of maybe a foundation cracking when sediment moving. Is the whole process set in place for the local mitigation fund? And how would the local government and local residents be able to tap into that? Go ahead, Mr. Bonham.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, go ahead, sir. I know you can't see my face, so it's hard to tell when it's
hot. I can't tell when, that's right. And that's my fault for not being there in person. The local impact fund would be available for the topics you mentioned, particularly the wells. I need to check exactly, and you're able to do this too through your staff, with the corporation, the timeline for publishing, basically the kind of steps for evaluation and application. I don't have that at my fingertips. That is a follow-up we'll do with Ms. Nielsen and your staff today. But it will be a published, stepwise approach. And Wells definitely strike me as kind of an eligible issue, subject matter, if you will.
No, thank you. It's just kind of a black box right now, and the local constituents are worried how it's going to be spent and how it's going to impact them. And the next one is the sucker fish behind the dams.
Yes.
I know that with these, it's a vital fish species in the sense that right now, downriver tribes and the Klamath tribes are trying to come to agreement on how that water should be allocated between the fish species, whether it be salmon or suckers. And the ag waters, you know, been shut off because of it. How many of these fish are going to be captured or saved and then replanted to habitat they can survive in?
So if I could, Supervisor Chris, I'd break that question in part. And at the broader level, like you, our department and others are living through this dynamic where in the upper basin, Klamath Falls, you have native fish in that lake, which are of incredible importance for a variety of reasons, including for the Klamath tribes. And their survivability, as you know, depends on the lake, Upper Klamath Lake, being a certain level. And then you have this other dynamic, which is from Iron Gate down for salmon and native fish in the lower part of the river. You need a river level, you know, of a certain level for sustainability there. And the river level and lake level can often be at odds with each other, particularly in dry hydrology. I'm as frustrated as you may be. I feel like I've lived for 15 years. Can't we all find a way to potentially improve storage? And I have been involved in, you know, 15 years ago, trying to think about feasibility for Long Lake as
just,
a new reservoir.
Just hold on, Mr. Bonham. I appreciate no comment. Everyone's going to get a chance to speak, but it's an interruption and a distraction for me. So if we can, Mr. Bonham, if you want to continue. Go ahead, Director Bonham.
So that lake level on Upper Klamath Lake is definitely a dynamic that is kind of producing this experience y'all are having, my department's having, communities and tribes are having, Bureau of Reclamation, with, you know, aridity, scarce resources of water. How do you balance water use across all these interests? And it's persistent, and I just wish enough of the right involved folks could sit down and talk about a water balance that would meet these interests. Now, the second part of your question, I think, might be more about some of the tributaries that have suckers behind reservoirs. Those suckers really aren't contributing to the situation I was describing in Upper Klamath Lake. So there's a distinction between some of these suckers and where they're found in the system. But the project implementation around decommissioning does involve the relocation of suckers from behind some of the reservoirs. So we would do a saning effort as part of implementation, and then relocating those suckers most likely over to appropriate biological spots on the National Wildlife Refuges.
Okay. Mr. Bonham, then I know this is regarding the water behind the dams, the flushing flows or the minimum flows that's been done in the past. I know 2014, 15, other years as well, there's been water released from behind those dams, either for a flushing flow or to meet minimum flow standards. And then that water saves water in Klamath Lake for agriculture, so they can finish a row crop or potato crop. Of course, that's a huge sacrifice for the residents along those reservoirs. It's you know, impacts them. Was KRC open to flushing flows, releases from those dams? And if so, how would it notify the local community just so they know something's coming up so they can be prepared for it?
All right. Good question, Supervisor. I would say first, that's in large part a Bureau of Reclamation question. Look, they run the water operation system for the basin. They need to be sitting down with the rest of us and see if we can work through a water balance. Some of that conversation, as you know, has been forced into federal court litigation. My department is not a party to any of that litigation. Historically, there have been moments where reclamation has pulsed water down the system, My understanding right now, Supervisor, looking at some of the hydrology most recently, is the spate of storms that came through, thankfully, has relieved a little bit of the pressure that I understand Reclamation was considering dropping below minimums in the river. And I think we have a little bit of space now where some of the federal decisions around water supply, maybe they can take a step back and we're going to end up having a conversation. I understand what you're asking about. If you flush water down the system from a supply and delivery to contractors level, will that be a regretted action later in the delivery production cycle? It's on my mind. I don't have an answer for you, but we're engaged in that with our federal counterparts and the reclamation contractors, which are primarily in Oregon. I took a minute while we were chatting to also just check one thing. And I think the local mitigation fund kind of timeline marker is early March, when the Renewal Corporation is expecting to kind of lay out the public process where everyone can see steps. And, wells, reservoir rim stability, and flood impacts are likely all eligible for, proposals from that fund.
And then, last question, or mainly a comment, a question. We're working with different groups here in Siskiyou County and regionally for such things as juniper tree removal, watershed improvement, enhancement. There's lost straws in the ground right now. And, I hope that, $10 million or $20 million dedicated towards the valleys and other possible funding we have available. One thing we all agree upon is that if we can put more water in the system, it'll be less feuding afterwards. It's kind of a comment or question, whatever you want to do, I'm fine with, but I appreciate your time here, Director Bonham, and respect my colleagues. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Supervisor
Preston. If I might, Chair, I would just say that it was really important for me to affirm, setting aside $20 million, 10 for each watershed. Participants today may not believe me, but I personally care a lot about these watersheds and communities. I also went back and looked at, over the last 5 years, our department's been able to make about $34 million of grants into projects in the county. And our Wildlife Conservation Board has invested about $26 million in 27 projects in the Siskiyou County. And I think a lot of that collaboration gets lost because we do have voices that really push y'all and us towards conflict all the time. There's a lot of really good work going on with landowners and ranchers and tribes and your RCDs. That's $50 million worth of partnership where we can help do stuff on the ground with landowners. And I like that stuff. So thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you, Director.
Supervisor Howe.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Director Bonham. This is Supervisor Howe from Scott Valley.
Nice to see you.
I wanted to first say I appreciate Tina Bartlett's support of the High Mountain Lakes project. It's something that I've been involved in since the late 1990s when I sat on the Watershed Council as an agency representative. And that idea first started to float about. It's a piece. Some critics say it's not enough, and I would agree it's probably not. It's not enough to fix all the watershed issues, but it is a piece. As you well know, the watershed in Scott Valley is, and the lack of water is a product of some changing climate conditions, but also a cumulative effect piece when it comes to water. We didn't get into this situation easily, and we're not going to get out of it with a silver bullet on one specific project. With that said, I'm not going to relitigate everything over the last 8 years because it's first off, we don't have time. But I do want to talk about a greater cooperation and maybe some push from the state to help what I confront every day. And what I confront every day is a loose collection of agencies, not just stores, that don't appear, that appear to be working independent of one another rather than working together cumulatively, to fix issues. The big elephant in the room for me is the Forest Service. I can guarantee you we could spend $500 million in Scott Valley on the valley floor and not fix the water problem. Without addressing the upper watershed piece. And right now, we're rapidly losing vegetation and our watersheds are turning flashy because of it. And the agency is not investing any money in reforestation on those uplands, which is only going to worsen the water condition as we go forward. What that brings to mind with me is I would encourage the department to take a look at and support the new legislation that's being proposed to bring the rest of the county into the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. From the standpoint that I've worked with Roger Dales in the past to work on watershed hydrology issues in upland, and that's the one piece that's significantly missing from the management of the Scott River. With regard to flooding, I do want to address, I can't escape the flooding piece. I know the dams were not built for flooding and controlling flooding. However, I've worked the past 8 years in this office that I hold with the Bureau of Reclamation to moderate flood impacts downriver. And specifically, we moderate the upper flow from the river with the dams in the spring when we have rain on snow events to a 15-foot gauge level at SIAD to protect a number of things. One thing it does is it allows the Shasta and Scott to crest prior to the release on the climb of the upper basin piece. And that's significant in keeping Highway 96 passable for SIAD and Happy Camp. It's an annual event that Highway 96 goes under. I'm looking to the other agencies because when the dams are out, that opportunity will be gone. And there are alternatives, but the last thing I want to do is cut off emergency services to Happy Camp, as has been past when we have these events for short periods of time, but not for long periods. I'll give you a chance to respond here in a minute.
Yeah, that's okay. Try.
Someone at the state level besides me, it would be helpful if there were some pressure put on the Forest Service, which actually has a forest highway, which is the road from Happy Camp over to Grants Pass. It's the Grayback Road, but they don't maintain, and it's an emergency route. Highway 96 gets cut off frequently by landslides below Happy Camp, and with this flooding, there is an alternate route on public lands as well that the Forest Service has that could be developed as mediation after the dams come out. And I don't know if you have an opportunity to influence that or not. I'm a little mouse crying in the wind, truthfully, on this issue, and I can't get the attention of these big agencies that could resolve these issues.
Supervisor, I wouldn't sell your voice that short. You have made a difference for your constituents in your advocacy. And I hear you on the Forest Service. That is something I'm willing to keep an open door open, with you, and think about our relationships with the Forest Service in Washington. I know forest health is part of the overall climate dynamic. It's not related to project implementation for decommissioning. And that's why I also went and took a look at what Cal Fire and Department of Conservation have done in the last 2 years. And I know y'all know that's resulted in projects to reduce fuels on the ridges above Mill Creek. between the Scott and Klamath, which is about 10 miles west of Wairika, and I think treat nearly 3,000 acres next to Aetna and Callahan. That's like 37 million. But that alone, I mean, forest health is a much bigger need, and having the Forest Service kind of match the state's commitment would be really important. On flooding, I'm also willing to keep my door open with you about, Happy Camp and Syed. I will say how that relates to project implementation. Look, again, Pacific Corps dams and the dams for project implementation are upstream by a considerable distance from Happy Camp. And even if there were a percent increase of discharge in peak flow, that's a possible risk for immediately downstream of Iron Gate. So I don't know the facts on why Highway 96 around the Happy Camp area have this flooding, but that is a public safety and infrastructure issue I'm willing to learn about. And again, I think this is a good example of the department being a party on the memorandum of agreement with you, and what I hope we can keep talking about, you know, when I come back in February and come back for your third meeting after that.
I appreciate that. It's a low spot along the river. And truthfully, it's not a pulse flow. It's a high flow situation that you would see in a hydrologic response over a week or two after a major storm event where that goes under. Going forward, Supervisor Kopsaf and I have met with your department monthly for
3 years,
4 or 5 years. I'd encourage you to continue that. The other thing I'd like to see go as well, because that, to me, that's a direct open channel and my constituents, to be able to put the specifics in front of the department that we're wrestling. Part of that, though, going forward, and that established a lot of credibility or communication credibility anyway between us. Part of going forward from a trust standpoint, what I would like to see is, like I said before, more coordination between the three departments that I wrestle on a daily basis. It's the regulation of the local folks that you have on the ground and your department, the Department of Water Resources, as well as DWR.
Yep.
Or excuse me, the Water Board. They seem to, once you get one issue fixed or headed in the right direction, another department comes around and sidetracks it. With something that no one anticipated. So that alone is one thing that keeps stirring animosity and anger among anybody who would want to work with the state to repair our watersheds.
Yes, I hear you and I agree. It's a legitimate complaint, and we can do better. And that would be something I would encourage you keep asking me about in these venues. I also would just quickly say, because it occurred to me, at the regional level with our regional manager, Tina Bartlett, I know we're willing to come. We have a lot of work with y'all in the county that runs way beyond implementation of this project. You know, our elk management, our deer management, other apex predators. And we've been thinking a lot about what we can do to help leverage post-fire assessment and restoration work around the McKinney Fire. And I think that is connected back to your point, Supervisor, just about forest health being a missing huge piece of the puzzle.
Appreciate that. Going forward, I know I don't agree with the decision, but that's that's the way it is. Going forward, we need to fix this. And because I can't go to a grocery store without a 2-3 hour conversation about water with somebody. And it's only going to get fixed with all parties at the table in an equal fashion.
Yes, I agree with you.
All right, Director Bonham, so, you know, one of the things that comes to mind when I'm having these discussions, and I think you mentioned how long you've been at it here. I'm grateful for that you have been with this whole process from the very beginning. I think that's one of the reasons why I went with Supervisor Kopseff and I, who have been here just as long as a Board Supervisor dealing with this. If you recall, when I met, I think I piggybacked on Supervisor Peters from Mono County, we met and I said, well, how come we cannot sit around, you know, sit at the table and just have a frank discussion? And I think the evolution out of that is that we did. We had state, KRRC, Pacific Corps, and I think one of the outcomes that came out of that is that we asked for a project manager, which Pacific Corps has stepped up and is going to provide for us. Because I think, as Supervisor Howe, you know, this board doesn't necessarily agree with the decision, but it's going to happen. And at this point, we need to do what we can to mitigate to the best we, to, you know, as we see it, the effects of, so to speak. So I want to thank you that you're going to spend the time. We're going to keep asking you for some more time. I think what we need to do is take a break for the clerk. I would hope that you could stick around because the public is going to speak. And that's probably, is for me, just as critical for our discussion that you hear from our local constituents what they're seeing, what they are going to do. So I don't know what your time frame is, but 5 minutes and we'll get right back at it.
Chair and board members, thanks for the invite. I will be off video and muted, but I will be able to listen to the rest of this session. And again, I know we have a lot of other issues in the county. I see the sheriffs on, and of course, you know, I'm a co-lead for the state task force on illegal cannabis issues. So there's a lot we do together. I look forward to continued coordination and conversation with you.
Before you go offline and listen to public comment, just two quick things that I think you can answer quickly. The department is committed to staffing dollars, funding for the Scott River, you know, red counts and fry counts. Is that a fair statement?
I think so, but let me just check with the regional manager and get back to you.
I hope so, because we lost funding on that a while back, and at that time the coalition of the willing kind of got behind that, you know, effort to get that as well. And then the other thing I hope the department's looking at is, as new territory for salmon habitat expands up into Oregon, that fish screen projects are on the radar to prevent what Siskiyou County is going through now for those in Klamath County, so that we can get ahead of that curve.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So, Supervisor, Director Bonham, I forgot Supervisor Ogren, who has completely missed her. So if you just give us a few more minutes, he has a few questions.
For sure. Yep.
He was busy looking to the right. thank you, Director, for your time today. We all appreciate your patience with us as we try to get through all of this. I just have a couple of questions regarding the erosion and sediment control plan. It was submitted earlier this month, and it brings up a few questions in my mind regarding restoration and monitoring, but it doesn't really give any, to me, clear time frame as to how long the monitoring process is going to take, and how long it should take. It seems like it's a very short amount of time that monitoring will go on for. And in my mind, it doesn't seem like it's long enough, and there's not enough time taken scientifically to look at that. Can you address that a little bit?
Yes. First, I'd say this can be an ongoing specific topic through the memorandum of agreement, because the Renewal Corporation will be creating a series of like reporting templates and monitoring templates. These are my words, but basically create like a dashboard spreadsheet of activity and effectiveness data, which I would expect the corporation is kind of engaged with your staff on. Second, what you're kind of looking at in broad strokes is a period from around the end of 2024 through 2030. So the years of 2025, 2026, 27, 28, 29, 30, 5 years, where you're gonna see pretty significant commitment into both monitoring, so data, gauges, information collection, and site restoration, as well as adaptive management. And this is in part through a contract with, you know, a national leader in this space, a corporation called RES, who, you know, is under a guaranteed maximum contract price and has taken on the responsibility of this monitoring sediment erosion over those 5 years. It could even be longer based on the monitoring and the adaptive management decisions in that time frame. So there are 20-something management plans that cover all of implementation. They're going to be submitted and approved by FERC. The memorandum of agreement will put your staff, you know, in the discussion at the table. And then a series of state and federal agencies, each of whom themselves will be requiring direct reporting on the topics of sediment, erosion, during that 5+ year window and monitoring. And those reports themselves would be public and again available in this kind of template of data management that the memorandum of agreement puts your staff at the table for. So those are some of my quick feedback thoughts, but again, a topic that I think we can keep as a rolling topic each time we engage on your list of issues to talk about for project implementation.
Okay. Can you give us an estimate as to how long you think the fish hatchery is going to take to build and be viable?
Yeah, this year. I mean, I think we're starting, pre-construction next month. Again, we've been working with your staff. And I don't think it's a, you know, more than several month construction window, season, you know, task. But let me check on that. Likely end date for completing the work on Fall Creek.
Okay. I'm going to be controversial. So where do the fish go when they're in the hatchery, once they're there?
Not sure I understand that question, Supervisor. Do you mean what happens to fish raised in the Fall Creek hatchery after they're they're released into the river for purposes of recreational, commercial, and tribal harvest, which is what happens now just at the location of Iron Gate?
So when the dams come out, and all that silt goes down the river.
Yes?
Speak it, sister. You can do
it. I'm just asking because everybody's listening.
I don't actually hear a question, so I'm
going to... Yeah, so those first couple years, it's going to be a mess. And those... Basically, those fish are going to go straight. They're not going to live in the river. They're going to go straight down the river and hopefully make it to the ocean. So they're going to live in the ocean for 2 years anyway before they try to come back up. And then hopefully they'll make it to our creeks, but they're certainly not going to spawn anywhere in that river, is my guess. Is that your guess?
Well, your word choice is a mess. That's not my word choice.
Okay.
Look, Iron Gate is a aging and outdated facility currently. Moving to Fall Creek is a smarter modernization step that ensures the existence of a hatchery as we go through project implementation. In the year of drawdown and then decommissioning, there will be sediment release into the river. However, the lower river is universally acknowledged in the scientific world as incredibly sediment-starved, which itself is a limiting factor for salmon. So all the permits and approvals, including the license surrender order by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, acknowledge there's likely an impact in the immediate year or two that is more than outweighed by the benefit in the long run for a variety of notable reasons. So this is an example of a topic I think we need to stay close to each other about and have a way to keep talking about as we go through the calendar year of 23, 24, and 25. Our department has a primary responsibility to ensure there's harvest opportunity in the ocean, recreationally in the river, and with tribes, all of which are important to your local economy. So I think this is a topic we should keep close conversation about, like in close coordination about.
I'm looking forward to the data, and I truly hope that we can keep really, that's why my question to the monitor, because I'm really looking forward to that data and hope that we can use it to our benefit and for future projects. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And that would be something, you know, we have many months to go through the state budget process, but if we're fortunate to receive five new positions, that's the kind of work I would envision they're doing as well.
Thank you.
Director Bonham, we have Supervisor Haupt has a follow-up question here.
Just one quick one. As you've done with the salmon reintroduction at Shasta Lake and with other places, you've extended experimental population status to those salmon. Would the department consider that for the area above Iron Gate? Because I'm the one looking at the regulatory piece of adding additional burden, and a lot of it's paperwork, to both the agricultural community and the forest industry.
Yeah, so I think, Supervisor, this is a question that's geographically, let's say, about, you know, the river up into Oregon, and there, experimental population, as you know, is a legal term of art in the Federal Endangered Species Act, so not our decision. But I am convinced that what Oregon and California, the federal government, have to do is assist all the rural landowners and water users in the Upper Basin with safe harbor or general conservation plan so that the fish coming back doesn't increase anyone's regulatory obligation. I personally believe that 150%, and that's part of the set of conversations I'm trying to insert myself in for that outcome.
I appreciate that. That actually do have direct control over a lot of things, speaking of the standpoint of timber harvest plans on the private lands that are in tributaries to the Klamath on the California side, as well as the mm-hmm. public lands, where you can only imagine how difficult the sediment discussions get with DWR, you know, the Water Board, and with National Marine Fisheries Service on those public lands.
Yep.
Any follow-up?
No follow-up for me, thank you.
Supervisor Ogre?
I'm good.
Michael? All right, Director Bonham, we're going to take a 5-minute break. Again, I appreciate you staying on as long as you can to hear the public comment.
Yes, thank you.
We'll come back at 1:15-ish.
Okay. 1:15?